The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov. A different week, an entirely different week. It's amazing how just a few days can just make such a huge difference to where we're at in terms of events on the ground. And luckily this week, we kind of return back to regular kind of humdrum usual things that we do, like focusing on Parashat Chaye Sarah, which of course is being read this week, and the fact that a lot of people like to go to Hebron and Kiryat Arba for Shabbat, because of course those places are mentioned in this week's Torah reading, and the caves of the Machpelah, the Marata Machpelah, the caves of the patriarch, apparently were bought by Abraham for 400 shekels. Apparently the shekel wasn't quite as strong then as it is now. Or maybe it was much stronger.
Yeah, much, and but property
much stronger,
prices.
Yeah.
Certainly, I suppose nobody really wanted that real estate back then. But interesting, nevertheless. All right, so there is a fragile ceasefire, right?
There is a fragile ceasefire. It's been holding for the last couple of days. The ceasefire was already agreed upon, as we discussed on Thursday, but it was broken quite a number of times. Quite a number of rockets were fired even after the ceasefire was agreed. And in fact, even as late as Friday night, rocket warnings were sounded in Beersheba. There were interceptions for the first time, Beersheba becoming involved in this particular conflict. Previously, they'd been kind of left out of things, and all of a sudden on Friday night, the residents of Beersheba were scrambling for their bomb shelters. And this time, we are told that the rockets that were fired were actually fired by Hamas, which again is for the first time in the conflict, because up until now the conflict was really conducted exclusively against Palestinian Islamic Jihad. But we saw a very public coming together on late on Friday, where Hamas officials were televised visiting the homes of those who had lost their lives during the conflict, and particularly the home of Abu al-Atta, who of course was the key person around which the conflict was focused. He was the person who was the subject of that targeted killing, which took place earlier in the week. And Hamas officials were televised visiting the homes of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad leaders in order to express their condolences for the losses that they'd suffered during the course of the week. And then all of a sudden, on Friday night, it was Hamas firing these rockets and the IDF responding on Friday night by targeting Hamas targets locations within the Gaza Strip in order to retaliate against that rocket fire towards Beersheba. We are fortunate that there were no further injuries, no further damage was caused. But it was a kind of a moment when we thought maybe we would be escalating back into the conflict. Since then, the peace is held. Things are pretty quiet. And even though the Palestinian side and also the Egyptian side said that one of the conditions for this ceasefire is that Israel would refrain from conducting targeted killings. And in fact, yesterday, Prime Minister Netanyahu publicly said that Israel had not committed to anything, including had not committed to ceasing the targeted killings, and that Israel reserves the right to do exactly as it deems appropriate under the circumstances. In spite of that kind of contradiction that we feel and we've heard, the peace is held up. Israel is back to normal in all areas, back to school, back to work, business as usual, at least for now. And I always say this, it's kind of just until the next incident happens.
Well, because there's nothing, it's very clearly not sustainable. There isn't a solution, which means that this is coming to a country near you, Anthony, unfortunately, whether we like it or not. Let's just talk about as well a little bit of the political side of what's going on there. Yesterday we did see some frantic diplomatic activity taking place to try and form a coalition government. How likely is it that this government can be formed, Anthony, and how much time do we have left? When do when does it need to go back to another election?
Well, the mandate that has been handed to the Kahol Lavan party by the president expires on Wednesday. So they have basically today and tomorrow to sort out a coalition government under the Benny Gantz leadership, if that's what they're able to do. And then there is a 3-week period after that during which any Knesset member can come forward and say, I've managed to get 61 people to support the formation of a government, and then it's back to elections. Now, the one mantra that we hear from all of the leaders is Israel doesn't want third elections. And, you know, nothing could be truer than that. The question is, how do we go about avoiding those third elections and getting back to where we are now? Because another round of elections is not going to bring anything new to this equation whatsoever. It just delays it another few months, and it just creates more frustration within the public, and it just delays the time when a government really is needed in place. A proper, strong government is needed in place, and at the moment we certainly don't have that. So what we've been seeing over the last few days is the president coming out very, very vocally criticizing both Netanyahu and Benny Gantz, effectively scolding them, as one newspaper puts it, for not getting on and making the relevant compromises that are needed in order to form this government. We also saw quite a lot of activity with Yisrael Beiteinu. This is the Avigdor Lieberman party involved, both negotiating with Likud and also negotiating with Kahol Lavan simultaneously. Both sides were reporting good progress, but it's not clear exactly where that progress is going. I saw quite a detailed report which says that Yisrael Beiteinu had agreed with Kahol Lavan all kinds of important issues that were on the Yisrael Beiteinu agenda and on their platform, their election manifesto, which included the recruitment of yeshiva students to the army and details about conversions, which are very relevant to the Yisrael Beiteinu electorate, and also talking about things like civil marriages and trying some way to limit the control that the religious establishment have over some of those immigrants from the former Soviet Union who still have an unclear status under halakha about whether they are Jewish or not, and as a result of that, they therefore have some restrictions on them. So we saw some reports about that making, you know, that the Israel Beiteinu party had made progress with Kahol Lavan, but it's still not clear how we're going to get to 61 seats. The other thing which is really fundamental in all of this is whether it would be possible to break up that 55-seat right-wing bloc that Prime Minister Netanyahu has constructed, because while that bloc remains one cohesive bloc and that people are not prepared to break away from that bloc in any way, there is no possible way of forming a government of 61 seats unless, of course, the Arab parties form part of the coalition government, which in and of itself is highly controversial and is a subject that Prime Minister Netanyahu raises at every opportunity. He actually was quoted yesterday saying that this is very, very dangerous for Israel and that it has presents an existential threat to Israel. I mean, he's using very, very emotive language in order to try to get people to understand that this shouldn't happen. So at the moment, the only thing that really seems possible between now and Wednesday is the possibility of forming a minority government. And Avigdor Lieberman seems to be the kingmaker, and he has actually not ruled that possibility out, that he may well support Benny Gantz go ahead and form a minority government. And in fact, that may be enough for now, to be honest, even though I personally am not a great supporter of a minority government because it seems a very weak way to rule the country. But that may well be enough for now, simply because on the other side of things, where the Netanyahu legal case is concerned, which is, of course, very, very instrumental to all of this, The prosecution have given a little indication that we may not have to wait until the middle of December for the announcement to come forth as to what the status of the legal case is and whether they intend to pursue an indictment against Prime Minister Netanyahu. And I've heard some rumors that they may even come out with a pronouncement later this week. And if they do that, that I think will be immensely helpful in clarifying whether Netanyahu can be part of the next government or not before the government is actually put together rather than after the event. Because at the moment, a lot of those discussions revolve around what happens if Netanyahu is indicted and will he then resign from the government? And I think it would be very helpful to know whether or not he will be indicted, and therefore I think that that'll help to clarify whether he can be part of the next government or not. So this is all happening in parallel. Very, very difficult to know exactly what's going to happen when. But all we do know is that if within 3 weeks from Wednesday we don't have a government, the law says we have to return to elections. And that's, of course, something that we all wish to avoid almost at any price.
Anthony, we don't have a lot of time, but moving on to an amazing story, and that is that the Argentinian and Uruguayan football teams have arrived in Israel for a friendly match that's going to take place this evening. There's been a long journey to get to this point, hasn't there been?
There has been a long journey to get to this point, and of course the game itself is just a friendly. It has absolutely no relevance to any of the competitions that are being played. I know that we're on international break at the moment with a lot of international games being played, mostly the European qualifiers for the European World Cup, the European Cup, not the World Cup, but the European Championships. And of course the South Americans had the opportunity to travel, and of course this comes on the back of that cancelled game that happened just before the World Cup when the Argentinian team was supposed to have come and played a friendly as a warm-up against the Israeli team, and that was cancelled due to lobbies by BDS and threats that were issued against Argentinian players. So of course there was a lot of excitement last night when Leo Messi landed finally in Israel, arrived with his Argentinian team. Of course, a lot of the focus on him because of the status that he has as one of the world's premier footballers, if not the premier footballer. But of course, let's not forget the Uruguayan team who've done so well in South America and have really come up the ranks. I suppose somewhat thanks to Luis Suarez, who plays for Uruguay, and of course he's Messi's Barcelona teammate. They played together for Barcelona. So some of the world's best football players are going to be playing this evening at the newly renovated Bloomfield Stadium in Tel Aviv. And a lot of Israeli football supporters turning up as a kind of reward for that cancelled match against the Israeli side. But this time around, of course, we'll have the opportunity to see Uruguay as well as Argentina. And a great deal of excitement. And the timing is fantastic. If it had happened last week, perhaps it wouldn't have been quite as exciting, but given the circumstances are different this week and things are a lot more relaxed, it's obviously given the players a little bit of more security to feel that they can come here without the background of the conflict going on. And of course, as far as the fans are concerned, the Israeli football fans, they will be turning up to Bloomfield this evening in their droves to watch what hopefully will be a very entertaining game of football for those who like that sort of thing.
Yeah, amazing. And the other thing, of course, was the fact that what competition was it in Abu Dhabi where Israel won, and it was the first time now we've seen the Israeli anthem or heard the Israeli anthem being played. Incredible. Like there's really some amazing improvement in these type of situations.
Absolutely. You know, even though Israel still doesn't have any diplomatic links with the Arab Emirates, Israeli sports people in general are now being much more accepted to go and compete in these places, and even being recognized fully in terms of the fact that, for the first time we've seen Israel's national anthem being played when judoka have taken gold medals at competitions now in Abu Dhabi as well. And so that was a really fantastic event when Alon Leviev took gold medal in the junior category, this time in jiu-jitsu, not in judo, but in jiu-jitsu. And, of course, the Hatikva being played there for the first time. So that was very exciting indeed. And we hope that this will be a sign of, you know, much better relations between Israel and the Arab countries in general.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, Anthony, that's where we leave it. It is 8 o'clock. We'll catch you tomorrow morning, same time, same place.